feel it. They all could. This had been a sad, angry, and unhappy home. Even now, the pain of that time burned its way through Mal, deep into her bones. She shivered. There was an empty place in the middle of the room where her mother's throne used to be. It had sat upon a great dais, flanked by two curving sets of stairs. The room was round and ringed with columns. A great arch cradled the spot where the throne had once sat, guarding an empty spot. The tattered remains of purple tapestries moldered on the walls. "There's nothing left," Mal said, kneeling on the one dark spot that no longer held a throne. "It's all gone." "You all right?" asked Jay, who was nervously blowing on his hands to warm them. She nodded. "It's..." She faltered, unable to find the words to describe what she was feeling. She had listened to all her mother's stories, but she didn't think they were real. Not until now.
"Yeah,"
he said. "I know." He shrugged, and she realized he'd probably felt the same way when they were in the Cave of Wonders. Mal knew Jafar and Iago talked about it all the time, but it was hard to imagine, hard to picture a world beyond what they knew of the Isle. It had been, anyway. Now everything was different. Jay sighed.
"It's all real, isn't it?"
"I guess so," Mal nodded. "Every last page of every last story. Even the curse," she thought, for the first time in hours. "The curse. Someone has to touch it. Evie has to touch it, and sleep for 1,000 years.
So, where is it?"
Carlos asked, looking around the cold stone room. "It has to be here somewhere," said Evie, turning to look behind her.
"Maybe we should split up,"
Jay said, a glint in his eye. "Think," Mal said. "My mother was never without it. She held it, even as she sat upon her throne." Mal moved back to the spot where the throne no longer stood. "Here."
"So where would it be now?"
Carlos frowned. "It wouldn't be where anyone else could touch it," Evie said. "Try asking my mother if she'll let you touch any of her own Miss Fairest everything memorabilia." Mal flinched at the word touch. The curse was waiting for all of them. Or at least, one of them. Just as the dragon's eye was.
"But she'd want to see it, of course, from her throne," Jay said.
Mal nodded. They'd all seen Jafar orient himself in his kitchen, directly behind his stack of coins.
"Which would be..."
Mal spun slowly around. She could picture her mother sitting here, clutching the staff, feeling powerful and evil, and, well, like herself, as she reigned over the kingdom. She shook her head. "My mother would have no problem cursing any of the people in this room for 10,000 years, let alone one."
"There! Look!" cried Evie, spotting a tall black staff with a dim green globe at its top against the far wall. It was, just as they had predicted, exactly in Mal's line of vision from the missing throne, but raised by some sort of magical light, a good 12 feet into the air. Far out of the hands of any interlopers, and yes, where it could not be touched.
Of course. There it was. It's really here. The most powerful weapon of all darkness. Evil lives indeed.
"It's right here," Evie was closest to it and reached for it eagerly. She shot her hand up in the air, extending her fingers. The moment she did, the dragon's eye began to shake, as if something about Mal herself was prying it loose from the very light and air that bound it. Evie smiled.
I've got it!
Mal saw Evie's hand curl toward it, almost in slow motion. The scepter itself seemed to glow, as if it were beckoning Evie toward it. Everything around Mal seemed to blur, until she could only see Evie's small, delicate fingers and the bewitched dragon's eye just beyond her grasp. In a split second, Mal had to make the decision. Could she let Evie touch it and be cursed into a deep, death-like sleep for 1,000 years? Or would she save her? Stop her? Do something good? While betraying her own mother's wishes and giving up on her own dream of becoming something more than a disappointment? Was she content to remain only a Mal her entire life? Never a Maleficent? She froze, unable to decide.
No! Cried Mal finally, running toward Evie. Don't!
What just happened? What was she doing? Why couldn't she stop herself? What? Asked Evie, shocked, just as a familiar voice boomed from the dragon's eye.
Whoever awakens the dragon will be cursed to sleep for 1,000 years!
Maleficent's voice was coming from the staff even now, echoing and reverberating around the room. Her mother really had left an impression behind her. What remained of her power and her energy crackled off the walls of the room, sparked to life by one accidental moment, and latent until now, when it had victims to torture. Evie's fingers brushed the air next to the staff, while Mal's hand closed upon it. And when it did, she fell to the floor, asleep. Mal blinked her eyes. She could see herself lying on the floor of the throne room, purple hair spilling out like a stain beneath her head. Her three companions huddled nervously around her.
So I'm sleeping then? Or am I awake? Or maybe I'm dreaming?
Because Mal knew she was seeing something else as well. She wasn't in the Forbidden Fortress anymore. She was in a palace. And there was good King Stefan and his queen and a baby in a cradle. They were happy. She could see by the light in their faces and by the way their eyes never left the child. Almost like a magnet, Mal thought. I know how that pool feels. A huge, gaily dressed crowd of courtiers and servants and guests assembled in a beautiful throne room around them. There were 2 good fairies hovering above the cradle, their wands making beautiful sparkles in the air. It was all so sweet, it was sickening. Mal had never seen anything like it. Not up close like this. Not in some kind of insipid storybook. What is this? Why am I seeing this? Then a green ball of fire appeared in the middle of the room, and when it dispersed, Mal saw a familiar face. Her mother. Tall, haughty, beautiful, and scorned. Maleficent was angry. Mal could feel the cold heat rising from her very being. She stared at her mother. Maleficent addressed the crowd gathered around the royal family.
Ah, I see everyone has been invited. The royalty, nobility, the gentry, and the rabble, I must say. I really felt quite distressed at not receiving an invitation. What was her mother talking about? Then Mal realized. Maleficent had not been invited to Aurora's christening. Mal had never known this was the reason her mother hated parties and celebrations of all kinds. But she knew exactly how her mother felt. The hurt, the shame, the anger, the desire for revenge. Mal had felt the exact same thing, hadn't she? When Evil Queen had thrown her party for Evie all those years ago and kept her out. Mal watched as her mother cursed the baby Princess Aurora to sleep 100 years if she pricked her finger even once on a spindle. It was some fine spellcraft, and Mal was proud of her mother's efficiency, her power, her simple rendering. One prick of one finger could bring an entire royal house crashing down. It was a beautiful, terrible destiny, well woven, deeply felt. Mal was proud of Maleficent. She always had been, and she always would be. Maleficent had raised her daughter alone and gotten by as best as she could, if only because there was no one else to do it. But her mother was made for evil. She was good at it. And in that very moment, and for the very first time, Mal finally understood that it wasn't just pride that she felt. It was pity. Maybe even compassion. She was sad for her mother. And that was something new. The crowd saw a monster, a terror, a devil, a witch cursing a beautiful princess. But Mal saw only a hurt little girl, acting out of spite and anger and insecurity. She wanted to reach out and tell Maleficent it would be all right. She wasn't sure it was true, but they'd somehow gotten along this far, hadn't they? It'll be all right, Mother. She had to tell her. But she woke up before she could. Mal blinked her eyes open. She was in the throne room at the Forbidden Fortress. Jay, Carlos, and Evie were standing around her nervously. When she had fallen asleep, she had been holding the dragon's eye scepter in her hand. But when she woke up, it was nowhere to be seen. Chapter 26. The Girl with the Double Dragon Tattoo.
You're awake? But you're supposed to be asleep for 1,000 years, cried Evie. How?
Mal rubbed her eyes. It was true. She was awake. She wasn't cursed. Why was that? Then she realized.
Prove that you are my daughter. Prove that you are mine, her mother had ordered her. Prove to me that you are the blood of the dragon. Prove you are worthy of that mark on your skin. The mark of the double dragon etched on her forearm. That had to be it. She held it up, showing the others.
It couldn't hurt me, said Mal. My true name is Maleficent. Like my mother, I am part dragon, and so I am immune to the dragon's curse.
Lucky you,
Jay said, eyeing the impressive tat. Mal smiled proudly down at the marking she bore. If she had been her father's daughter, weak, human, she would be asleep by now. For 1,000 years. But she wasn't. She was strong and awake and had proven to everyone that she was her mother's daughter. Hadn't she? And when she brought her mother the dragon's eye... But wait, where is it? Mal said, looking around accusingly at the trio. I had it right in my hand.
Good question, Jay said, sounding a little wounded himself.
It's gone. When you grabbed it, there was a flash of light that blinded us for a second, and when we could see again, it was gone, said Carlos. He shrugged. Easy come, easy go. The other three glared at him. Easy? Evie raised an eyebrow, looking as tough as she possibly could. Mal narrowed her eyes. Jay, come on. Hand it over.
I swear, I don't have it,
said Jay, emptying his pockets to show her.
I planned to take it. I wanted to take it.
I was even going to take it out of your own hand while you were sacked out.
And?
He shrugged.
Just didn't get around to it, I guess.
None of us have it, said Evie. She folded her arms, looking annoyed. And by the way, you knew the curse was on that staff, and you had all of us come with you anyway? What was up with that?
Mal kicked a stone with her toe.
Yeah, I didn't really work out the plan very well.
So why didn't you let me touch it then? Wasn't that your evil scheme all along?
Mal shrugged.
What are you talking about?
I just didn't want you to. It wasn't yours to touch. Be honest. You were going to curse me, weren't you? You were going to let me touch that thing and end up taking the 1,000-year nap.
Evie sighed.
Jay looked up. Carlos backed away instinctively. Mal knew neither one of them wanted to get anywhere near this conversation. She knew that because she felt the same way herself.
I guess that was the plan.
Mal shrugged. You don't have to explain yourself. Not to her.
But she found, strangely enough, that she wanted to.
Is this still about the... You know.
Evie looked at her.
Come on.
Mal was embarrassed.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Sure you don't, Jay muttered.
Even Carlos laughed. Mal glared at both of them. Evie rolled her eyes.
The party. My party. Back when we were little kids.
Who can remember that far back?
Mal said, sticking out her chin stubbornly.
Evie looked tired. I begged my mother to invite you, you know, but she refused. She was still too angry at your mother. They've competed for everything for as long as they've known each other.
Mal nodded again.
I know. Because of that stupid election about who would lead this island, right?
Evie shrugged.
You know what they say? Magic mirror on the wall. Who's the biggest ego of them all?
Mal smiled in spite of the entirely awkward nature of the conversation.
Evie looked her straight in the eye.
Look, my mom messed up.
The party wasn't that great, really. You didn't miss much.
It wasn't a howler?
Not anything like Carlos's at all. Evie smiled. That's right. I'm legendary, Carlos said.
Mal glared at him. As if I didn't have to almost beat you into having that party. She looked back at Evie. Look, I didn't mean to trap you in Cruella's horrible closet. Mal glanced at Carlos, adding, the one she loves more than her own son.
Ha ha, Carlos said, not laughing at all.
Well, sort of not laughing. Actually, he was kind of laughing. Even Jay was having a hard time keeping a straight face. Evie giggled as well.
Yes, you did.
Okay, I did, Mal smiled. It's all right. Evie smiled back. I didn't get caught in any of the traps.
Cool, said Mal, even as she was embarrassed by her softness.
Carlos sighed. Jay punched him in the gut with a grin.
Come on. At least your mom doesn't only wear sweatsuits and pajamas.
Let's not talk about it, said Evie and Mal almost in unison.
Yeah, enough with the violins. We got a long walk home, Jay said. And I'm not all that sure that this place has a back door.
Mal had a hard time keeping her mind on finding the way out of the fortress, though. She was soft. And she was worried. She had just saved someone's life, practically, hadn't she? What kind of self-respecting second-generation villain did anything of the sort? What had happened to her grand evil scheme? Why hadn't she just let Evie be cursed by Maleficent's scepter? Weren't princesses meant to sleep for years and years anyway? Didn't that basically come with the job description?
What if my mom is right?
What if Mal really was weak like her father? And worse, had a propensity for good somewhere in her black little heart? Mal shuddered as she walked along behind the others. No, if anything, being immune to the curse just proved she was definitely not her father's daughter. One day, she too would be Maleficent. She had to be. But whether she was Maleficent's daughter or not, she had failed. She was returning home empty-handed. Oh, boy. Did she not want to be around when her mother found out?
Chapter 27, The Descendants. This wasn't the victory lap Mal had imagined when she'd first set off in search of the Forbidden Fortress. Defeated, the unlikely gang of four began to retrace their steps, just looking for the way out. They had lost everything, as usual. By any reasonable standard, or by her mother's infinitely less reasonable standards, Mal thought, they were utter and complete failures. Every last one. Especially her. The moment they retreated from the throne room, though, Mal couldn't help but feel a shiver of relief at also leaving its darkness behind. Although, oddly enough, the fortress had a different feel now, like it was dead. Mal couldn't feel the same energy it had before. Do you think the hole in the dome's plugged up again? She asked Carlos. It feels different in here.
Maybe, he said. Or maybe the magic it sparked is spent now.
Mal looked up at the sky. The crystal lattice work was still there, sturdy and invincible as ever. She had a feeling there wouldn't be any more magic on the island. Nobody said a word as they found their way back to the hall, where the magic mirror was now just an ordinary surface. especially not Evie, who avoided so much as a glance at it. Nobody said a word either, as they hurried once again over the crumbling marble floor, this time avoiding both the scampering rats and the fluttering bats, going nowhere near any goblin passages or suffocating mazes or dusty tapestry rooms or portrait halls, until they reached the vast empty cave that had so briefly become the sand-filled cave of wonders. Especially not Jay, who only quickened the pace of his own echoing footsteps until he once again found the rotting wooden door that had brought them there the first time. And Carlo seemed in a particular hurry to get through the twisting passages that led to the black marble-floored, dark, fogged halls of the main fortress. As he pushed his way out the front doors, the gargoyle bridge once again faced them. Faced him. When the others caught up to Carlo's, they stopped and stared over the precipice where he stood. The dizzying depths of the ravine below were, well, dizzying. But he didn't seem in any hurry to step back up to the bridge this time. "It's fine," Evie said encouragingly. "We'll just do what we did before." "Sure, we cross one stupid bridge," Jay nodded. "Not very far at all." That was true. On the other side of the bridge, they could just make out the winding path leading its way down through the thorn forest in the direction they'd originally come. "We're practically home free," Mal agreed, looking sideways at Carlos, who sighed. I don't know. Do you think it looks a little more, you know, crumbly after all those tidal earthquakes we were feeling back there? It doesn't seem like the safest plan." He looked at Mal. Nobody could disagree. The problem was still the bridge. It was all in one piece this time, with no missing sections. But they all knew better than to trust anything in the fortress. And not one of them dared set foot on it after last time. Not after the riddles. Though they'd made it over easily enough the first time, once they'd answered the riddles, they hadn't thought about having to go out the way they'd came. "I don't know if I can do it again," Carlo said, taking in the faces of the once again stone gargoyles. He winced at the thought of their coming to life again. In Mal's own mind, she hadn't gotten much past imagining the scene where she reclaimed her mother's missing scepter and came home a hero. She had been a little foggy on the actual details beyond that, she supposed. And now that the whole redemption thing was off the table, she really didn't have a backup plan. But as she looked at Carlos, who stood there shivering, she suspected at the memory of collapsing bridges and fur coats and a mother's true love that wasn't her son. Mal figured out a way across. Mal stepped in front of him. "You don't have to do it again." She took another step, and then another. "I mean, you don't get to hog all the cool bridge action," she said, trying to sound convincing. "Now it's my turn." "What?" Carlos looked confused. The wind picked up as Mal kept moving forward, but she didn't stop. Mal pulled her jacket tightly around her and shouted up at the gargoyles. "You don't scare me! I've seen worse! Where do you think I grew up, Auradon?" The wind howled around her now. She took another step, motioning for the other three to move behind her. "Are you crazy?" Jay shook his head, sliding behind her. "Mal, seriously, you don't have to do this," Carlos whispered, ducking behind Jay. "Definitely crazy," Evie said from behind Carlos. "Me? Crazy?"
Mal raised her voice even higher. How could I not be? I go to school in a graveyard and eat expired scones for breakfast. My own mother sends me to forbidden places like this because of some old bird and a lost stick. She scoffed. There's nothing you can throw at me that's worse than what I've already got going. As she spoke, Mal kept pressing forward. She had crossed the halfway point of the bridge now, dragging the others right behind her. The wind roared and whipped against them, as if it would pick them up and toss them off the bridge itself if she let it. But Mal wouldn't. Is that all you've got? She stuck out her chin, that much more stubborn. You think a little breeze like that can get to someone like me? Lightning cracked overhead, and she started to run, her friends right behind her. By the time they reached the other side, the bridge had begun to rock so hard it seemed like it would crumble again. Only this time, it wouldn't be an illusion. The moment Mal felt the dirt of the far cliff safely beneath her feet, she stumbled over a tree root and collapsed, bringing Carlos and Evie down with her. Jay stood there laughing, until he realized that he wasn't the only one laughing. Guys? Mal looked up. They were surrounded by a crowd of goblins, not unlike the ones who had chased them through the goblin passages of the Forbidden Fortress. Except, these particular goblins seemed to be of a friendlier variety.
Girl, one said.
Brave, said another.
Help,
said a third.
I don't get it, Evie said, sitting up.
Mal and Carlos scrambled to their feet. Jay took a step back. Finally, a fourth goblin sighed.
I think what my companions are trying to articulate is that we're incredibly impressed by that show of fortitude. The bravery. The perseverance, it's a bit unusual in these parts.
Parts,
repeated the goblins.
It talks, Evie said.
Mal looked from one goblin to another. Thanks?
Not at all, said the goblin.
The goblins around him began to grunt animatedly, although Mal thought it might be laughter, too. Carlos looked nervous. Jay just grunted back. The fourth goblin sighed again, looking back at Mal.
And if you'd like our assistance in any way, we'd be more than happy to help convey you to your destination.
He looked Mal over. She looked him over in return.
Our destination?
He suddenly became flustered.
You do seem far away from home, he said, adding hastily, not to presume, it's a conclusion I draw only from the irrefutable fact that neither you or your friends seem, well, remotely goblin-esque.
The goblin's grunt laughed again. Jay stared.
You're about 2 feet tall. How would a guy like you get people like us all the way back to town?
Evie elbowed him. Not to be rude, Jay said.
Rude,
chanted the goblins, still grunt laughing.
I'm pretty sure that was rude, Carlos muttered.
Ah, there you have it. Alone, we are but a single goblin. Perhaps even a brute,
the goblin smiled.
Together, I'm afraid we are a rather brutal army, not to mention we pull an excellent carriage. Pull!
The goblins went nuts.
An old iron carriage, like the kind you might have seen Belle and Beast ride away in, except black and burnt and nothing that either the Queen or King of Auradon would so much as touch, appeared in front of them. No less than 40 goblins manned either side,
fighting for a grip on the carriage itself.
Why would you do that?
Mal said, as a good 7 goblins battle the broken door open.
Why are you being so nice?
A good deed, helping a fellow adventurer. Perhaps there's a chance for us to get off this island yet,
said the goblin.
We have been sending messages to our dwarf kin asking King Beast for amnesty. We've been wicked for such a very long time, you know. It does get tiresome after a while. I would kill for a cream cake.
Currants, said a goblin. Chocolate chip, said another.
Mal had to admit, she was starting to feel a little exhausted herself. She knew because she slept the entire way home, without even being embarrassed that her head was resting on Evie's shoulder. When Mal returned to the Bargain Castle, she fully expected her mother to scream invectives at her for failing in her quest. She opened the door slowly and stepped inside as quietly as she could, keeping her eyes on the ground. It was no use. Maleficent was on her throne.
So, the prodigal daughter returns, she said. Her voice sounded different.
Mother, I have something to... Mal stopped, looking up, and stared, and then stared some more, in about 10 different varieties of shock, because she found herself staring at the long black staff with the green globe at its top that her mother was holding. The dragon's eye. Is that? She couldn't speak. Maleficent nodded.
Yes, it is the dragon's eye.
And yes, you did fail me.
But thankfully, not all my servants are as useless as you.
Mal ignored the word servant. But how? Maleficent laughed.
Silly child, what do you know about quests?
But we found it in the Forbidden Fortress. I just touched it an hour ago, said Mal. It was in your own throne room, suspended on the wall where you could see it from where your throne used to sit.
Her mother eyed her. Mal couldn't be certain, but it was possible. For the briefest of all split seconds, that her mother was the slightest bit impressed.
I touched it, and that thing knocked me unconscious.
You touched it? You don't say, said Maleficent. Well, good job, you. You really are soft as your father.
Mal bristled. I don't understand.
You touched the dragon's eye instead of tricking one of the others into doing it? Such weakness. I didn't want to believe the news when I heard it.
Maleficent banged her staff upon the floor next to her feet.
How many times, Mal? How much more will you shame me?
She rolled her eyes.
I sent Diablo out after you to retrieve the eye from me. He must have taken it from you while you were sleeping off the curse.
She shook her head.
I knew you wouldn't have it in you to do what needed to be done, and I knew I couldn't take any chances.
It appears I was right.
Again.
Diablo cawed proudly.
So she'd been right about feeling as if they were being followed.
Of course. That was Diablo.
Mal felt like giving up. It never mattered
how hard she tried or what she did, she would never impress her mother. Even now, her mother had eyes only for the dragon's eye. "The only thing is, it's broken," said Maleficent with a frown. "Look at the eye. It's dead." For a moment, she sounded like the same angry little girl who had cursed a baby over a party invitation. Mal remembered all too well, and she looked at her mother through new eyes. "Well, the dome is still up," said Mal finally. "It keeps the magic out. It was down for a brief moment, but there would be no magic on the island anytime soon." "Maybe, or maybe you broke it when you touched it," Maleficent accused. "You are such a disappointment." Meanwhile, at Jafar's junk shop, an angry Jafar was berating Jay, who had returned home empty-handed. "So you're saying you did find the dragon's eye, did you? So where is it, then?" "It disappeared," Jay protested. "One minute we had it, and then we lost it." "Right, and this has nothing to do with a certain noble deed performed by a certain daughter of evil for a certain other daughter of evil?" Jay froze. "Excuse me?" The words "good" and "deed" were chilling, particularly on the Isle, and particularly when coming out of his father's mouth. "Do you think goblins keep secrets particularly well, boy? The news is all over the island." "I swear, that's what really happened. I swear on a stack of stolen..." Jay blinked. He couldn't think of a single thing to steal at the moment. But to be honest, for once in his life, he didn't even care. "You're such a disappointment," Jafar snorted. Over at Hell Hall, Carlos was getting an earful after Cruella finally discovered her furs in disarray in her closet. "Who has been in here? It looks like a wild animal was trapped with my furs. What imbecile would do such a thing?" "A wild one?" Carlos winced. He knew it was pointless to even try. Not when the closet looked like this. His answer was a scream, and it was blood-curdling, even in his mother's signature shrill octave. "I'm sorry, Mother," whimpered Carlos. "It won't happen again. I know how much you love your furs." The words were almost a whisper. He could see the faces of the gargoyles from the bridge, mocking him as he said them. Then he could see Mal, Evie, and Jay laughing at her with him, and he had to keep from secretly smiling himself. Cruella sniffed. "You're such a disappointment." Over at the castle across the way, the evil queen was lamenting the state of Evie's hair. "It's like a rat's nest. What happened? You look awful." "I'm sorry, Mother. We ran into... well, let's just say I couldn't find a mirror." "I found a few," she thought. "Just not the kind you want to look at. Not when you're supposed to be the fairest of them all." "Just promise me these rumors I'm hearing aren't true," her mother said. "All this talk of a virtuous act," she shuddered. "The goblins are saying such horrid things about the four of you." "You know that goblins are horrible creatures, Mom." Evie hid her face. She didn't know what to say. To be honest, she didn't even know what she thought. It had been a strange few days. Not entirely bad,
but strange. The evil queen sighed.
Oh, you forgot to reapply blush again. Oh, dear, sometimes you're such a disappointment.
Mal sat out on the balcony, hearing the sounds of laughter and mayhem from down below. Then a shout.
Mal! Jay called. Come down!
She ran downstairs. What's up?
Oh, nothing, just trying to get away from our parents and disappointing them again, said Carlos.
You too, huh? Asked Mal. She turned to Jay and Evie. And you? The three of them nodded.
Come on, let's go to the market, said Evie. I need a new scarf.
I can get you one, said Jay, waggling his eyebrows.
Oh, and Evie?
Here you go, he said. I believe this might be yours.
My necklace, said Evie, putting the poison heart charm around her neck once more with a smile.
Thanks, Jay.
I found it in his pocket, said Mal, but even she was grinning. With a whoop, the four descendants of the world's greatest villains ran through the crowded streets of the Isle of the Lost, causing havoc, stealing and plundering together while the citizens of the island ran the other way. They were truly rotten to the core. Even Mal started to feel better. And in fact, as they laughed and sang, Mal wondered if this was what happiness was like. Because even though the four of them weren't quite friends yet, they were the closest things they had to it.
You will join me for dinner. That's not a request.
Beast. Beauty and the Beast. Epilogue. Sunrise over Auradon. While the band of four villain kids were causing havoc in the streets of the Isle of the Lost, Prince Ben was looking out the window from his high vantage point in Beast Castle, lost in a few thoughts of his own. It was true that Grumpy the Dwarf had told him he'd make a good king. But privately, Ben wondered if he was right. More to the point, he wondered if becoming a good king was even something he cared about at all. Did it matter? What he cared about? What he wanted? Trapped, Ben thought, staring out over the vast expanse of the kingdom. That's what I am. He looked up at the sky, as if it held the answers. The blue wash was bright and clear as usual, and he could see all the way to the distant horizon, where Auradon itself dissolved into nothing but misty shoreline and azure water. No. Not nothing. Ben thought of his dream, of the island, the Isle of the Lost. That's what everyone called it, even his father. He considered again what it would be like to live as they did, trapped underneath a magical dome, just as he was in his royal life. They were prisoners, weren't they? His father tried to pretend that they were not, but even Ben knew otherwise. They were exiled to the island by order of the king. Just as Ben was made to live in the castle
because he was the king's son, and because my father loves me, Ben thought, and because I was born to this. It was impossible to stop thinking about it. He flinched. Ouch! Ben said, as a needle poked him again in the armpit.
Sorry, sire. Forgive me, sire.
Lumiere, who was measuring him for his coronation suit, quailed. Quite all right, said Ben, who looked kingly, at least according to Lumiere, in the royal blue velvet suit with yellow piping. It had belonged to King Beast, who had worn it to his own coronation. It was my fault, I moved.
Your mind is elsewhere, sire, said Lumiere sagely, as befitting a future king of Auradon.
Perhaps, said Ben. For a future king, he was surprised by how little he knew about the Isle of the Lost. How did the villains fare beneath a dome? How did they live, eat, take care of themselves? How were their families? What were their hopes and dreams? What did they see when they stared out the windows of their own castle, or cottage, or cave? Ben remembered he had heard that a few of them had children. Some would have to be his own age by now, wouldn't they? He wondered how they dealt with living in the shadow of their infamous parents. I imagine that for them it's a lot like this, he thought, staring down at his royal beast head ring, the one just like his father's, wearing his father's suit, fitted by his father's tailor, standing at the window of his father's castle. We're all trapped. I'm as trapped as they are. The more Ben thought about it, the more he knew it was true. He hadn't chosen to be born a prince and become a king, just as they hadn't chosen who their parents were. They were prisoners for a crime they themselves had not committed. That was the greater crime, wasn't it? It's not fair. It's not our fault. We have no say in our own lives. We're living in a fairy tale someone else wrote. In that moment, Ben suddenly understood why it was that the sidekicks wanted more for their lives. Because he found he wanted even more than that. He wanted things to change throughout Auradon. Everything, he thought, for everyone. Was that even possible? On the other hand, how could it not be? How could he possibly keep going with the way things were now? Ben thought about it. If he was going to be king, he would have to be himself, his mother had said. And he was different from his father. That was clear to everyone, even Lumiere. Ben would rule, but he would rule differently. He would make different rules and proclamations. His mind wandered again to the image of the purple-haired girl with the bright green eyes. The girl from his dream. Who was she? Would he ever meet her? Was she one of them? One of the lost souls on that cursed island? He had a feeling that she was. And just then, he had a flash of inspiration, one that would change the fates of both Auradon and the Isle of the Lost forever. Why not? It's about time. His mind was made up.
Sire, where are you going?
Cried Lumiere as Ben suddenly leapt away from the needle and thread. A flurry of straight pins and bespoke chalk and measuring tape flying into the air around him.
to find my parents. I have something to tell them, and I can't wait, said Ben. I've got the most brilliant idea.
To find out what happens next, The Descendants premieres on the Disney Channel in August 2015.
This book was narrated by Sophia Carson. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Isle of the Lost, a Descendants novel, by Melissa De La Cruz. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, classics, histories, and more. So look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.